Well, good morning and welcome to Accessibility. Why can't we all just get along? My name is... Oh, if I get closer, they told me I distort. You're going to adjust my volume. So maybe I can find out how much you had to drink last night. Or if you had any sleep or just came straight here from the club. This conversation at this table is about the struggle between good design and accessibility. And as we put this panel together, Sharon Rush asked me to be the moderator because while I am the self-appointed web accessibility goddess at the University of Texas at Austin, do notice self-appointed, and I work directly for the UT webmaster and have functioned as one of the accessibility evangelists on campus with my mentor, John Slayton. We've accomplished a lot at the university, and we've even been named the most accessible Research Class 1 university website last year by the University of Washington, which I was quite proud of. And yet, Sharon knows that I do have a bit of a struggle now with rich media, museum sites, and trying to get the resources to make them accessible. So that makes me a good person to struggle with, a person who's passionate about accessibility and rich media on the web. And at this wonderful panel are some amazing people that I've gotten to know very well in the last couple of days. James Craig, who is an analyst from Frog Design, senior design technologist from Frog Design, and also has a graphic art background. He works as the web communications director for the Austin chapter of the American Institute for Graphic Arts. And he has really found a way to fuse design and accessibility.
I notice you've given me credit for all of frogdesign.com. I appreciate that.
That's right. That's right. I put relevant URLs up on the screen so that when I get to these Canadians and British, you know, that I don't have to say all the little, you know, dot things in them. You can also read all about James at cookiecrook.com, or at least what he's willing to blog about, which includes his adventures with, is it the Africa Bambata?
Bambata.
Okay, so there's lots of adventures to read about James there.
She asked me for a funny story. I once told her I was chased by some Black Spade goons.
Yes, he did. That was his best story yesterday afternoon. I'm sure the stories got better, but I lost them as I was in the bars. although I did like the people that I found in the bars. Where I know James from is the Accessibility Internet Rally, where he has served as a judge, as a trainer, as an advocate, and as a web designer and a board member. So he's our accessibility local. And Derek Featherstone, who I met probably 48 hours ago, former high school teacher turned... Oh, there you are. Turned web designer, developer, usability and accessibility consultant. Basically, he does it all. So these are internal struggles that he has to deal with. He does run his own business on furtherahead.com, conveniently. And you can find his accessibility articles out on watts.ca. CA must be Canadian, all right. And he does have a delightful blog called Box of Chocolates. And when I asked him why his blog was called Box of Chocolates, he says, because a blog is like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. And one of the things I really like about Derek is he loves to challenge trends and question the norm, which makes him fit right into South by Southwest and the Austin culture. And last but not least, Ian Lloyd, who, you know, had to fly the farthest on our panel. Ian Lloyd is accessibility.com. He is returned.
Accessify.com. I can't claim that one.
Good. Keep me honest this morning. I've only had 4 hours or 5 hours of sleep. He's returning from a year-long sabbatical. I asked him what were his favorite places on his wonderful travels. And he said New Zealand, Thailand, and Malaysia. When pressed yesterday for an answer there. And so he's just getting back to accessify.com and has much thanks to Patrick. How do you pronounce Patrick's last name?
Well, I think it's Lauka.
For keeping the site up to date in his absence. So it'll be nice to see you back on that site as well. He's a web designer in the UK for Nationwide Building Society, where he's a web designer, developer, usability, and accessibility expert. Kind of sounds like, you know, Derek, but over in the UK. He is a member of the Web Standards Project. And the most interesting thing that I've found out about Ian so far is that he's 8 1/4 years old.
Still true.
It is absolutely true. He is a leap year baby.
Ian was in bed at about 9 o'clock last night. He couldn't get into any of the bars.
He needed us to rock him to sleep.
And what we're having here today is a high-level discussion on accessibility. It's some of the challenges and the struggles that we deal with. We're not going to talk about code. We're not going to play Jaws for you. We assume that you have some basic accessibility knowledge. If you don't, then all of these people here love to get emails, including myself, with questions on the basics. And Sharon Resch even offers a wonderful accessibility university here in town where we'll train you hands-on experience. Yes?
Rendezvous.
Oh, and rendezvous. So why don't you, Ian, explain how they can ask questions easily through rendezvous?
Well, if you've got a Mac, you probably know what it is anyway. I mean, I'm up there on the screen. So if you want to fire a question off, then you know, feel free, and I'll just read it out. I'm not actually connected to the screen, so I'll just read it out for you.
Well, and also, you know, he'll, you know, in case you say something really inappropriate, he might screen it. But be nice to Ian. Be nice to Ian. What we thought we'd do is we'd start out with some questions where we don't all agree. And so the first question that we don't all agree on is, what is your accessibility standard of choice? And let's see, who wants to talk about their standard of choice first? Yeah, Derek. Oh, wait, no, you lost more brain cells than anyone else last night. James.
All right, well, I guess I would go for WCAG priority level 2 at this point, and disagree with a couple points on Glenda, the differences between 508 and, or Section 508 for all of you non-Americans here is the national standard for accessibility. WCAG 2 is obviously more international, and there's a few talking points, but that's the one I'd go for at this point.
Okay. So you're WCAG priority 2. Derek? How about you?
Just collecting my brain cells.
More brain cells. Okay, Ian. Yeah. No.
My choice, or I guess the standard that I try to hold myself to in any development that we're doing is 2+, priority 2+. So anything that we can easily add in from priority 3 that isn't going to, you know, cause us any extra problems, we might as well do it while we're in there anyway. So that's sort of where I'm usually aiming for.
So the minimum standard for you would also be priority level 2.
Minimum 2 plus.
So you're going to make me look bad when I disagree with you, all right?
Yes.
John will love it.
You're not going to like my answer. I agree. I'm
going to disagree with that.
Okay. Now, I'm an idealist, so I'd love to say that what I do tends to go towards the level 3, WCAG 1.0. It usually ends up somewhere around 2, because some of the smaller things to achieve 3 just, I don't know, just kind of get away.
The first thing I want to do right now is check and see if these guys are real, okay? Because I work on a campus with thousands of webmasters and hundreds of servers, and trying to get anywhere near priority 3 is not going to happen in my lifetime.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't try.
What I've decided to do, with the help of many conversations with John Slayton, is we've centered on 508. And as a campus where I can't make anybody do anything, what I needed to do was pick the standard that I thought was the easiest to accomplish. I'm just trying to get up to that base level. And so there's a difference between what I want idealistically versus what is realistic in my world, where I have nothing but carrots. I don't have any sticks, nor do I want sticks to beat my webmasters with. I want to encourage them with a standard that they can clearly understand and not go to a year's worth of accessibility training to figure out, because you guys do have a lot of that accessibility knowledge. So am I wrong?
You know, my main problem with Section 508 is just a few points. For example, if you have a JavaScript, a client-side script, that is not accessible. In Section 508, you don't have to make it accessible. You can just give the user a note saying, too bad, this is what the script would do if you could use the script.
Let me tease you with this functionality.
Exactly. That's kind of my main problem with 508.
And when I told Derek I had a problem with forms, and, you know, because I get pushed to roll back to P1. You know, Glenna, why don't you just choose P1? Why are you holding us to 508? And I said, you know, really, I've listened to my forms in JAWS, and they don't need labels. You know, really, do I have to do this? Do I have to make my webmasters do it? And Derek says,
absolutely, I have to do it.
Why?
Well, the basic premise is that adaptive technology continues to evolve, and it continues to get better, and that's wonderful. But that doesn't really mean that we shouldn't explicitly say things or set things up within our web pages so that the adaptive technology doesn't have to work as hard. Because adaptive technology, like screen readers, will actually start to make some assumptions and try to decipher what label goes with what form, and sometimes it'll do it based on position. But we've encountered this actually in several instances where if you don't actually label the form field, for example, in a multiple choice question where there's multiple radio buttons or even a set of check boxes, you'll actually run into a situation where the answer will be read, but you'll think the user will actually think that they're answering question one or option one, and they're actually checking off option two because it's not explicitly defined. The label is not explicitly tied to the checkbox or the radio button. And so, you know, because we get pushed on this all the time, and it basically gets to the point where we say, yes, the adaptive technology is going to continue to evolve, but give it every benefit of explicitly tying those things together so that the label is there. And you know, that way you know that there's no room for error. There's no room for confusion. So,
and it has to be said, adding a label tag is just so easy. Why wouldn't you do it?
Yeah.
Good semantics also gives that added usability design benefit of making a larger clickable area for the user.
So, you know, all of a sudden I was feeling really bad for questioning labels. But it is a question that's posed to me all the time by my webmasters, and I guess I had gotten tired. So I will not agree with them on P2. I'm going to hang on 508, and they can live a better life.
We can agree to disagree.
We can agree to disagree. We certainly can.
She went to the water cooler earlier, and we decided to gang up on her. You know,
That's all right.
I'd also like to mention the WCAG 2.0 panel is this afternoon. If you really want to see where web accessibility is going, check that one out, too. WCAG 1 is very HTML-centric, and WCAG 2 is kind of a better way of thinking about accessibility problems without necessarily being tied to any particular technology. So it's a little more forward-thinking, and that should be a really good panel, too.
And I don't know if I can just jump in, but to Glenda's point, I think that having worked in an educational environment versus more of like a client-centered environment, it's a whole different beast to try and move an educational institution to that. And I mean, you probably would like to have a much higher standard.
Absolutely.
But it's not
realistic for me.
But I agree with you. I mean, that trying to achieve that in that kind of behemoth is hard.
I've got friends. And while we were having this discussion and they were all agreeing and I was still disagreeing, we ended up talking a little bit yesterday about what you guys see done in the name of accessibility that isn't really the right thing, or things on the standards that really bug you. And, you know, one of the things for me is long description. You know, I don't get it. I don't see the point. I think it's silly to hide that long description underneath the covers. You've got sighted web developers that are going to forget that it's there. It's just, I don't like it at all. I want the text readable by everyone, not just a person with a screen reader. And I think that this is useful for people who may have some other kind of disability that can benefit from seeing the picture and the text at the same time. So that's one of the things that I think is just silly about the standards. What do you guys see that's...
I've never used long desk. Never.
Never used it?
Never.
We agree.
I would always go for that approach where you can explicitly say something on the page because, well, it works.
We've got an example right here. I think this is what she's talking about, actually displaying the caption on the page makes a lot more sense from a design perspective too, because then everyone benefits from that explanation.
You know, I know one thing that that always comes back to me when we talk about long descriptions is that you'll hear a lot of accessibility people talk about, you know, something like a picture is worth 1,000 words. Some people need 1,000 words. Well, I always extend this one more and say some people actually want and need both. So why not give them both, and let's make it so that everybody can benefit something, and you know, why hide something in a little, you know, despite the fact that Longdesk has, you know, wonderful-ish support. why hide things? And if we can, you know, we've seen examples where someone will put a chart or a pie chart actually in the page, and then include a Longdesk that actually links to the tabular data that the chart was actually generated from. And it's kind of like, well, you know, what if I wanted to actually, you know, copy that tabular data from my web page and put it in a Word document or in an email. You know, why are we making things hard by hiding them? And so that's where I guess we see a lot of things that are done in the name of accessibility that don't necessarily always help with universal accessibility. They're only there to help maybe, you know, a small minority of people. So.
Can I just jump in?